Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have a really special guest, a very, very good friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, Johnny Halpert, who was the coach for so many years, over 40 years at Yeshiva University. Johnny, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Steve. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. Well, I guess let's just start off with the beginning, which is, did you think ever that your career was going to end the way it ended?
No, in all candor, I after a while you start thinking about, well, how is it all going to end? It has to end, but this was not one of the scenarios that I had, ever envisioned, no.
And the amazing amount of publicity, all the years you were coach at Yeshiva University for over 42 years, there were articles that were written and you won all kind of awards and I would always read about you and hear about you, but unfortunately, at the very end, everybody picked it up. There wasn't a paper from the Post to the New York Times to radio and to other Jewish media and so on. It's really been incredible. Why do you think the story resonated with so many people that they decided to pick this up?
I've thought about it. Besides the obvious that, over 42 years, you accumulate a lot of, a lot of friends and a lot of supporters and things like that. But I think the story resonated because, I just want to be careful here, because I think people identified and felt that this was just unfair, quote-unquote not right. And unfortunately, I think it happens to many people, and I think people, the story resonated with them, because many of them may have had similar situations, whether it be in business or in education, where things like this have occurred. So I think that's part of the reason why it's resonated so much. And then besides the obvious one where, over 42 years and, 300 players and so on and so forth, I just think that's what really
I think you're making a really good point, because I think people, especially as they get older, start to think about their careers and how's it gonna wind down. And everybody thinks about it, and as an employer, you think about it with your employees. Employees think about it, and I think it just kind of touched the hearts of a lot of people to think, here's somebody who's been there for so many years, and obviously not a well-paying job. Everybody knows you didn't do this because you were getting some money. Because thank God, I know you for many years, and you had a successful business, and you've been very successful in everything you've done. You did it because you just loved it, and you loved everything it represented. So, I think that's certainly something that happened. But you know what? I want to go beyond that. I mean, we had to talk about that because I think it was important, but I really want to go beyond that because I really want to talk about the 42 years more than I want to talk about the last few months. So let's go back to the beginning. And, knowing you for a long time, did you always want to be the coach of Yeshiva University, or it just happened?
I never set out thinking I was going to be the coach at Yeshiva University. I think probably when my quote-unquote coaching career began in Camp Rory at Rabbi Weinbach's camp, where I was the waiter's counselor, which automatically meant you were the waiter's coach. And I had the great, great fortune of having two campers, one named Stu Pollen and one named Larry Schiffman. So if you coach players like that, then you think coaching is pretty good. So it starts really at Camp Rowley and MTA with Mr. Wettstein. And I guess I always, at that point, I wanted to be a teacher. And so coaching, every teacher needed a second job. So I sort of started to hope that maybe someday I could become the coach of MTA. But I never envisioned being the coach of Yeshiva College. No, I never actively pursued it. As a matter of fact, in 70, I graduated in 66. I took the junior varsity job at MTA. And then in 72, Mr. Wettstein called and said he was retiring and offered me the MTA job, which in Rabbi Weinbach, which I grabbed immediately. And then about 2 weeks later, Red Sadger called and said, listen, Sam Stern is leaving. He's going to New York Tech, and I want you to coach the college. So I had both these jobs literally within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And
wow. Amazing.
So I took the college job, even though
sure.
The high school
yeah.
job had, had lots more potential for championships. But, the college job was like a dream.
You know, it is a dream. There's no question. And over the years, I mean, there's been so many different stages of development of Yeshiva University and their basketball, from the early days when, you know, they had a lot of public school players and they played a certain level, and then later on more Yeshiva players, and then you were able to, you know, go and find talent in Israel, which was a whole new era, and now we're kind of back to where you were almost at the very near the beginning with a lot of Yeshiva players. It's really not easy. I mean, the truth of the matter is, it's remarkable that you've won. Could you believe that you actually won over 400 games?
No, when I reflect back, no, because it's not exactly an even playing field. And I've in all the years I've been coaching, I tried never to, you know, use excuses and things like that, because you can't do that. You just got to go play and think you can win and do the best you possibly can, but it's not an even playing field. It is difficult. And the truth is, the yeshiva, the college basketball program, sort of almost reflects what's going on in the general basketball world, because in the 50s, when basketball was at its heyday in New York City, there were many, many Jewish basketball players available in the public schools, and Red tapped into that. And if you look at the great 50 teams of the 50, I would say many of the top players there had come out of the public school system, although they were surrounded by very fine yeshiva high school players, and they were very, very successful. But, you know, as we moved, and many of those players, maybe they themselves were Orthodox, but they came out of Orthodox homes, they had Orthodox grandparents, and then starting in the 60s and 70s, there were fewer and fewer public school ball players who were Jewish, so there were less people to draw from. And with open admissions in the 70s, well, that changes the entire picture, where essentially, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, you have minority students coming into the city colleges and all the colleges, and the whole basketball world starts turning upside down, for not only from Division III, but through Division I, even into the pros, and the game starts to change. It starts to become a speed game. It starts to become more of a game filled with athleticism. When I played in the 60s, we never got pressed. When I started coaching in the 70s, we got pressed every night. The game just started to change dramatically as the athleticism of the players starts to change, and until it evolves almost today, where it's a completely different game than it was back when we started. So, yeah, and therefore the challenge at Yeshiva was to find alternate sources of players. And, you know, in the beginning, it was a struggle to make that transition. And fortunately, you know, the events took place in Israel, where also Israel basketball took off. And when Israel won the European Cup with Maccabi Tel Aviv, well, the whole sports world in Israel changed. Basketball became the number one sport. And now all of a sudden, Israelis wanted to come to the States to play ball, and college teams in the States wanted Israeli players. And so I saw the opportunity there. Nice. to bring some of the Israelis in here, and, you know, and surround them with yeshiva high school ball players. So the only difference that happened here is Red had public school players he surrounded with yeshiva high school players, and I had Israeli players who I surrounded with yeshiva high school players, and we were both able to be successful.
Right, and the formula worked. There's no question. Now, there's really no place like Yeshiva University in the sense that where else could a Jewish college player play and still really maintain any kind of semblance of Judaism? Really no place, right?
There is no place. And there have been all kinds of stories, you know, the most famous one being, of course, Tamir Goodman, where he wouldn't have to play on Shabbos and so on and so forth. But it really, if ever works. I mean, although Tamir, to his credit, never played on Shabbos, all the other players who did go on to, quote-unquote, sit on Division I benches, it never worked, and it's never going to work, because at that level, Division One, you cannot have a player not practicing or playing Friday nights, and for a coach to be able to maintain that team. It just can't happen. It's silly to think it's going to happen, and no. So the only place, really, the only game in town is really, if you want to maintain your Jewish values and you want to maintain your religious practice, there's only one game in town, and that's yeshiva.
And that's what makes it, that's really what makes it so unique, is that
right.
it is a place, as you said many times, if you play ball for Yeshiva University, you're not playing ball for a college, you're playing ball for the Jewish people, which I think you talk about in your book. You know, we haven't even began to talk about your book a little bit, which just came back, and are you still coaching? Kind of interesting. I guess when you wrote the book, you didn't think the answer was going to be no, but but it's kind of curious that, you know, are you still coaching? No. Okay. But in the book, which is really phenomenal, by the way, it's so interesting. Anybody who's interested in that, you talk about the players who played, and you talk about the fact that, yeah, you know, it's if you're really a good player and you're Jewish, then why don't you want to play at Yeshiva University? Because, right, you know, you could bring so much credit to the Jewish people, and you've had so many great moments, I know. And so maybe let's just talk about two or three of the great moments. You mentioned some of them in the book. What are the things that really stand out, you know, when you think about it?
Well, I guess, you know, it's an easy question. It's a hard question to answer. Because there are so many moments. Many of them, obviously, are the victories, last second shots, the baskets. You know the typical basketball stuff. But some of them are rather different kinds of moments. So I talk about in the book where we go up to play Trinity College, a Catholic school up in Connecticut. That it's a 3:30 game. And we're in warm-ups, you know, 10 minutes to go to game time, 12 minutes to go to game time, and the players realize they have to daven mincha right then and there because when the game's over, it'll be too late to daven mincha. So they run into the parking lot because they can't daven mincha in the school because there are crosses in the school. So in the parking lot, they stand in their uniforms. It's about 7 degrees outside, and they're davening mincha. So I go over to the referees and I say, listen, don't worry, you know, they're coming back. They just have to say their afternoon prayers, and the referee said to me, well, I don't blame them for praying. Trinity is a tough team. They're going to need all the help they get. So, you know, and the fans couldn't quite make out what was going on. So, that stands out to me, you know. And then just very, very recently, you know, the other night we went out, we played St. Joseph's College out in Long Island. And before the game, coach came over to me and said to me, listen, Johnny, in tribute to you tonight, we're going to play Hatikva in the St. Joseph's gym in tribute to you.
Wow.
And I said to myself, you can't do anything better with your career than to have to reach the point where St. Joseph's College is going to play Hatikva before their home game. So, you know, you have a moment like that. It really kind of, you know, it shakes you. I mean, I really mean it. I was just like, I just couldn't think that I had done this out in Patchogue, Long Island.
It's fantastic.
I just want to add that Patchogue, Long Island is 5 minutes from Ronkonkoma. These names don't mean anything to you, but if you know anything about Ronkonkoma in the 40 was a hotbed of Nazism. They had Nazi rallies out in Ronkonkoma. Up to like 15 years ago, the street names in Ronkonkoma were still named after, you know, some of the leaders of the Nazi party. And here it was. Here it was. They were going to play Hatikva out there. And they were playing Hatikva because of me. You know, Steve, it's, you know, how can you ever forget that?
No, it's great. And I tell you, one of the stories I think that I read in the book, and maybe you could talk about, is the player who came to the game, and unfortunately he was dating a non-Jewish girl. And what happened? That I think it's just phenomenal.
Well, it really is an incredible story because the young man, you know, he came to, he was a public school player. I'm going to try as little as possible to identify who he is.
Right.
I've spoken to him, and he was a little reluctant to say okay to do the story, but I did it. Anyway, he came to Yeshiva with very little Jewish identity, played public school ball. I recruited him. He was a good player, all that, a very good student, but he didn't have much Jewish identity, didn't really know really who he was and how well-grounded he was, but slowly he started to integrate himself. And then one night, again, came to a game, and there's this very attractive African-American young lady sitting behind our bench, and she's also wearing a big silver cross. So I went over to her, and I said, I think you made a mistake. I think you're sitting behind the wrong bench. The team we're playing is, I think you belong here. She says, oh, no, I'm here because I'm number 24's girlfriend. And I said, oh my God. So anyway, she came to the game, and finally, after having this internal debate with myself, if I should speak to him, is it my place to speak to him, because he's dating a non-Jewish girl. So I finally spoke to him, and he reacted very poorly, called me a racist. He just, you know, reason you don't want me to go out with her is because she's black, and you just, you know, it was like everybody else here, and so on and so forth. He went on and on and on. You know, I tried to explain to him that I just thought he was, you know, making a decision today that he would maybe possibly regret, and I felt I had a responsibility to talk to him about it. He said, "Are you going to throw me off the team?" I said, "I'm not throwing you off the anything." I said, "I'm just asking you to do me a favor." And, you know, I think if you want, I can't tell you what to do, but at the same time, you know, it's very embarrassing to Yeshiva University that you
because
would
because of the intermarriage and so on, right?
Right, because of the intermarriage. That's because she's African American.
Of course,
that's not the issue.
Right.
The issue is simply that she's not Jewish in terms of intermarriage. Well, okay, so fine. After a couple of games, they stopped. She stopped bringing her. I really didn't, you know, talk to him about whether they were still dating or not still dating. I assumed they were. I assumed there was not much I could do. Maybe a year or two later, Aviva and I are walking on a Saturday night at Forest Hills. We're going for a walk, and all of a sudden, this little red sports car stops in the middle of Austin Street. Excuse me. This kid jumps out of the car, runs over to me, says, "Hey, Coach, it's me. I just want to let you know, I'm married a Jewish girl. Take care," and jumps back in the car and drives away. And then about a year later that, we meet him at Costco. And he says, "Hey, Coach, I have two kids, and I'm sending them to Yeshiva." And then maybe about a year ago, a year or two ago, I'm sitting in a bagel store, and he walks with this 9-10-year-old kid. He said, "Hey, Coach, how are you?" So it's so funny. He says, "Just want to introduce you to my son. You know, we just took a haircut next door. We're, you know, it's Erev Rosh Hashanah. We're going to shul tonight." So, wow. You have stories like that, and then, there are a lot of stories like that. It turns out there were more stories than I ever realized like that. It was only after this whole unnecessary hoop-de-doo, you know, that all of a sudden, I have over 400 emails.
Really?
From players and friends.
So it sounds like there's a new book coming out.
There is no question, a second book. You know,
That's going to be quite a book, I can imagine, right?
Right.
But I guess people don't realize, Johnny, is that, you know, you viewed the job. Yes, you were a basketball coach, and you're a very good basketball coach, and you love the game, but you brought so much more to the school and to the students. I mean, you talk about the concept of Torah Umada, and you talk about somebody who represented it. You know, in my mind, you were always, you know, the epitome of what that really represented. And I think the book and all the stories we hear really bear it out, because so many of the kids who came, you know, became Jewish, you know, whether they became observant or not, they were definitely more Jewish when they left. Many of them married Jewish, you know, girls, and they had Jewish families, and all of it because basketball was the vehicle to kind of get you to that level.
Right. I never started out to do Kiruv. I always viewed myself as a basketball coach. And through basketball, I don't think I ever did it consciously, just through basketball, the values you could learn from competitive sports. I just try to teach them values and what I thought was really important in life situations, and why was it so important to play for Yeshiva and what it represented and so on and so forth. I never set out to do Kiruv. I never set out to be a social worker. I set out to be a basketball coach. And I think that's why maybe I was successful, because it was my approach was never to bring him and then coach. My approach was, I have to coach. This is a basketball team. We have to try to win. We have to try to do it right. And, you know, there's another piece here, which, you know, sort of all the nice things that people are saying about it in terms of Midos and what I've done, and it's very important. But what I really also am very proud of is how our teams are seen and respected in the quote-unquote general basketball community, the non-Jewish basketball community out there, where, you know, we've built a program where the basketball team, you know, out there, that I didn't say in Midos, out there it's basketball, and we're very well respected. And that's something I'm very, very proud of. And it's not only that we're respected as a basketball program, but maybe this story highlights it. So about a week or two ago, I got a call from the Metropolitan Basketball Writers Association, which represents all the Metropolitan coaches, athletic directors, and writers in the entire, you know, New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. And they said, "Listen, Johnny, we want to award you with the Distinguished Service Award this year, and don't worry about it. We've checked when Pesach is." So we know there's no conflict, because I checked, and the dinner is going to be on Tuesday night, April the 22nd, and I know that's the last day of Passover, so we're okay. So my first reaction was, wow, these guys went to the bother of checking when Pesach was going to be because they wanted to honor me. Now, of course, the little sidebar here is, though, is that it is the last day of Passover, but Pesach ends that night at 10 to 9. So I said, I thank you very much, but I won't be able to attend the dinner until, you know, 10 to 9, 9 o'clock. He says, well, you can't come earlier. I said, no, I can't come earlier. So the award's going to get deferred until next year. But, you know, the fact is that they are, you know, yeshiva and what we stand for and our values, they have come to respect that. And to me, that's a wonderful thing that I think we've been able to do and yeshiva's been able to do is to be have a well-respected basketball program, despite the fact, you know, that we haven't won a championship. But, you know, no one really wants to play us in the playoffs, I can tell you that. You know, and so we've had great success. That's something I'm really, really very proud of. The other night in the gym that night, I cannot tell you how many college coaches, high school coaches, referees, even the commissioner of the Skyline Conference, came Saturday night.
Really?
Honor me.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, most of the people didn't know who they were. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, majority of everyone there was from the Orthodox community, but there was, there was a significant number of coaches who were there, and there had been many more, but many of them had games Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and couldn't attend. So, you know, to me, that's the sidebar. The yeshiva basketball team is well-respected in the general community. And to me, that's a great accomplishment. It's not just the basketball team that's respected; it's yeshiva itself and the values that we represent is respected. So I guess if St. Joseph's wants to play Hatikva before a game, I'm not sure you could do much better than that, Steve.
No, I don't think so. And I think on that note, Johnny, I mean, you know, we could go on and on and on, but I really wanted to interview you because I thought it was important. Pay tribute to all the years you spent there and all the great work you did. And somehow, the ending didn't end the way you wanted it or the way many of us wanted it, but it can't negate everything that you did and all the great work you did. And I think it's important that the Jewish people understand that and what you brought not only to Yeshiva University, which you brought to the Jewish people. So thank you so much for being on the program. I really enjoyed it. And continue good luck, and I know we'll be hearing from you again. So be well. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Steve. Shabbat shalom.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.